Greetings, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. It's me, LaVon. Thank you for joining me. Happy September 25th, 2015. So on Friday nights, we try to balance out the week of news with practical things that you can do in honor of Year of Solutions to better yourself and your community. So in honor of that, we're going to be talking about permaculture. I'm super excited. Matt Powers is somebody that I connected with because of my travels to the Heirloom Expo and some new friends that I made. And this guy is doing some really cool things with the idea of permaculture, which is defined as a system of agriculture and social principles centered around stimulating or directly utilizing the patterns and features observed in natural ecosystems. So this includes food, shelter, energy, soil, water, all the things you can imagine that we are included in our living, like ethics and climate. So hopefully we can connect all the aspects of existence and honor them all simultaneously. It's kind of like the same idea of holistic medicine versus allopathic medicine. Permaculture would be like holistic medicine, where you look at the whole picture and the manner in which we operate now, like a systems of industry. Hold on, guys. We're getting Nicole. Let's see. Hi there. This is LaVon.
Hi, it's Leslie. I'm just going to listen in.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you. So I was just talking about permaculture and comparing it to the model of holistic medicine, and the system in place now is comparable to allopathic medicine. And I'm really excited because Matt Powers is going to be joining us shortly as well, and he is establishing a method to teach people permaculture. And he's a life skills educator, and he was a former public school teacher. He's a seed saver, he's a family man, and he's an author of the Permaculture Student Series. And he's also a really big self-reliance advocate. So he's going to be teaching us some of his ideas following that model. And he's also launching an online school. And somebody told me that it also incorporates the ideals that would be required in the tools that are necessary to homeschool a child. So imagine if you could homestead and teach your child simultaneously. It's like, sounds like my dream. What are your thoughts on that, Leslie?
It sounds like a really interesting show.
Okay, well, I'm excited. But the thing that is really important that I want to bring to everybody's attention before we get into permaculture is SB, Senate Bill 277, has a referendum. Basically, tomorrow is the last day that you can sign said. Oh, we're getting another call here. Hi there, this is LaVon.
Hey.
Matt, thank you for calling us. How's it going?
Thank you for having me. It's going really well. How do I sound? Is it okay? I've got you on speakerphone.
You're going to want to turn down the audio in the back so we don't have an echo. Like if you're listening through a speaker on your computer as well.
Yeah, is that better?
That's a lot better. Thank you for asking.
That is, I run a podcast, so I totally checked that first. Always got to check that first.
I appreciate that. I didn't know you had a podcast. When did you do that?
I started it a few months ago. It's called Permaculture Tonight, and it's on
iTunes and SoundCloud.
Nice. And when can people, like, how does that work? You just can look it up on those?
Yeah, you can just look it up and then download it all, and I give it away free, and there's no advertisements during it. It's just
there it is.
The people I know in permaculture.
Awesome. Thank you. That's great. That's another great resource. And I gave people a little insight to what you're doing, but of course I'd like you to go into great detail and tell us about what you're working on. And most importantly, can you define permaculture to those who have no idea what that means and why it may matter to them?
Okay, so permaculture is a design science based on the patterns of nature that provides beneficially for both humans and the planet. That's all.
It sounds so simplistically wonderful. Like, I love the notion of it. Earlier, I was comparing it to the model of, like, holistic medicine, because you consider all of the things, not just one aspect of the thing.
And that's why engineers love it. And that's the funny thing, is it's when you get into it, you realize that there's these different, like, camps of people in permaculture. There's this huge engineer camp, and they're, like, making rocket stoves and figuring out how to build buildings that, you know, trap heat in the ground below them and then release the heat during the winter. Amazing, amazing things. Yeah, like with fans. So they're, like, blowing fans of blowing the dirt, blowing hot air down to the dirt beneath greenhouses and having actually a heat shield beneath the greenhouse so that it releases around the heat shield during the winter. It's incredible, totally incredible. Jeff Lawn on jefflawn.com has a video on this, and it's in Canada, so it's convincingly cold,
right.
So you know it works.
That's
and it's just
incredible.
The power of a fan.
Wow. So it's this idea of sustainability is really pushing the people in our society to become really creative and... That's so inspiring to hear that such a thing exists.
Yeah, and that's the thing about permaculture is it's hope. It is us returning to our role in a cycle and pattern with the natural world and seeing the natural world have a real response, seeing the natural world, like, explode before you. And at the same time, most of us are making businesses as we do this, and either teaching people how to do it or doing it to such a degree that we make such an abundance that we just have to make a business to deal with it all.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally hear where you're coming from. So, yeah, it's stimulating the economy, too. So that's it is really inspiring to see what people are doing, and I'm really excited to talk to you. I have so many questions.
Yeah, fire away.
Okay, so next thing I want to discuss is permaculture student, like online. Like, what's going on with that? And how does that relate to homeschooling? And why are you a previous teacher? Can we talk about that as well in reference to all that?
Okay, cool. So I was a teacher at a school where it was all one-to-one, laptop to student, and so there was a pretty small classroom ratio. I think there was at one time like low 20s, like 22, 23 to 1, mm-hmm. Teacher to student ratio, so a pretty small classroom, and we were allowed to do whatever we wanted, basically, if we could defend it. So in other words, I was able to design my curriculum from scratch.
That's awesome.
I taught things like mashups. I had the presidential candidate Lawrence Lessig Skype in with us when he was Girl Talk's lawyer.
Oh,
and
what?
He talked to us about, like, making mashups with these MacBooks. Because the thing is, these kids could, like, tear audio off anything and video off anything and then, like, use it. And it's like, okay, guys, if we're going to do that, we have to make it transformative and operate in this, you know, the fair use clause of, you know, of copyright law.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had Lawrence, like, Lessig talk to us about it. And so I was this educator that, you know, tried to use technology to liberate kids and tried to get kids to be empowered. And I had many students that went on to do these incredible things. And they are they're still doing incredible things, and I have two of them are my students in my online course now. But what happened is I realized that as much passion as I have for teaching people how to think clearly and write clearly, the public school format is so restrictive that when the person that was actually shielding me in the district left, I got, like, all this Common Core hoopla, like, piled on me. And, like, I had a Common Core, like, administrative, like, quality control officer, basically, is what it, what she equated to, from another district who put her kid in our school. And I don't know why she did that. Maybe her kid wanted to get away from her. I don't know. But she said I couldn't teach outline because it wasn't the Common Core standard.
Oh, what?
Right. And so I'm, like, adapting NYU, like, textbook. Like, we read Dubliners by James Joyce in sophomores, in, with sophomores in the foothills of the Central Valley of California. You know what I mean? So we're, like, in this place in Madera that supposedly is, like, all this economic depression and you know what I mean? And these kids are excelling, and they're not, I'm not testing them. I'm not doing homework. What we're doing is we're having meaningful discussions about things. And then I'm encouraging them to improve their writing because they're writing about something they care about. And so suddenly they care about the way they write. So I was just, you know, trying to turn people, like, on, basically, and get them functioning fully. And I started getting into permaculture, and I realized that I needed to just teach that. And I started, like, using it in my courses at school, and they actually offered me, when I was getting a leave, they offered me, like, to teach just permaculture and monitor homeschool kids and do permaculture gardens all over the district. And I just couldn't do it because they were going to put me in the office with the people that, like, were the people who were messing with me. And, like, my son got banned from the school. Because he was there during the KC testing, the state California state standard testing for 10th graders. And one of the parents complained that it's unprofessional to have him there that day because it's such an intense testing day. And the thing is, it's 7th grade standards and they're 10th graders. So if it's such an intense testing day, they've got totally other issues on their hands. I just didn't have a good experience.
It sounds like it wasn't geared towards it. Okay, you can compare
there's
it to
a lot of negativity and bureaucratic nonsense.
Exactly.
And then people bringing in, like, federal mandates that they say are just guides. So, but then when they have these quality control officers that are representing how it's supposed to be interpreted, completely different. And so I had to leave. Because I couldn't teach, like, you know, I teach 1984, I teach Brave New World, I teach, you know, the books that a lot of us read and loved in our English classes in high school, and I offer them in groups, and the kids pick which ones they want to read, and so I just did things in a radical student choice kind of way, and it totally upset the board, the district, because all the other teachers were using homework. And my scores were the highest in the county for the sophomores for their standardized test, even though I never used tests.
Wow. So
it was creating all these problems, and people kept attacking us. And so I was like, I just wrote this book called The Permaculture Student in the middle of all this while I have a lot of energy for things that like this. And so
you're inspired, you know. I love it.
Well, you know, the real thing is, it's like, my wife has had cancer 3 times, and I have 2 boys who are 5 and 9, and they're the most important thing to me, and my legacy is what I leave to them. And I don't see people being able to leave a positive legacy or know how to leave a positive legacy. And I want to leave every place I go on this planet better off than before I came to that area.
I say the same thing. I try.
Right. But I feel like that's our birthright. That's what we are. That's who we are, and that's what our function is. And because we are part of nature, we are not a part of, like, we're not separate. So we need to participate in those cycles. We need to be, and the most amazing thing about being understanding what permaculture is it exposes this truth. And the truth is this, that we are the most positive forces for good and most powerful forces for good mm-hmm. on the planet. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're so negative when we choose to do things negatively, mm-hmm. because the reverse is perfectly true. People are like, we can destroy the planet 200 times over. We can grow. Yes. We can enrich the planet 200 to 300 times over, beyond yes. our even comprehension. So that's what permaculture brings, is this idea that you can actually do it in a science-based, in a way that I can show to science teachers all over the nation, and they go, can I have this for my spring unit? And I'm like, yeah, you know, you can use the digital and share it with your class. And they're like, really? And I'm like, yeah, we have to spread this. And
we got to tell more people about this.
Right. Well, that's the whole point, is that I'm selling this stuff pretty cheap because people have to know. And like my online course, I'm about to set it up so it's on a monthly rotation that people can sign up. And I'm setting that up so that families and neighborhoods and permaculture groups and homeschool groups can buy it once and then use it with everyone and share it with everyone in the neighborhood in person, not digitally.
Hey there.
Yeah, where did I lose you?
Oh my gosh, that hasn't happened in a long time. You must have been too powerful. The force of your conversation in its essence was just like, I can't handle this, and the radio station went wee. So calm down, Matt Powers. Turn down the power a little bit. No, but we lost you at you were talking about the beauty of permaculture. And how you have to share it, and how you're sharing these courses for really affordable, and how it's important to you. And you were talking about, I'm curious to know, how has living in the permaculture lifestyle aided your wife's lifestyle and healing abilities? Like, how is she doing?
Well, it's kind of the only path because it's provable nutrition. And so, for instance, we started doing only organic. We started juicing. We started doing all these things to start doing the Gerson therapy to fight her cancer because it kept coming back.
Yes.
So she got thyroid cancer when she was 22, 23, right after our first son was born. They found it. And it was basically like making it hard for her to breathe. And so they're going to take a bit of it and look at it. And then they went in to do that and they saw that it was cancer. And she came out, the doctor came out in the middle of it and said, it's cancer and we're going to take it out. And I was young and just a bass player, you know, do what you're told, you know, mm-hmm. play the bass line right. Mm-hmm. And so I just was like, okay, doctor, I say you do that, I guess. I don't, you know, I mean, she just told me that's what had happened. So that's what they did. Mm-hmm. And then 3 months later, she got cancer on her thigh where, like, she's not, like, tanning or anything. But she, like, on her thigh where it really wasn't exposed to the sun, and so I thought melanoma was caused by skin cancer, and so I started doing all this research and started asking all these questions, and then all these uncertainties started cropping up about the radiation and the half-life and the level of harm and babies and proximity and all these different things that I started asking questions, and basically they had no answers. And it totally freaked me out, and I was like, what is going on here? And I realized that the doctors are really just going from a playbook written mostly by healthcare companies.
Yeah.
And they're just like, oh, you feel this way? Well, these are the drugs I prescribe. Oh, you have that problem? I look it up in the index, and this is the thing that I prescribe. Oh, that didn't make you feel good? Well, what's next in line? It's this thing.
Mm.
And so I just lost all my confidence in doctors. But we have good doctors now, but it took many years to find them. I have a naturopathic MD
there
now that we work with.
That's nice.
Right. Best of both worlds, right?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of food as a healer. I mean, it makes so much sense, and the idea of permaculture in addition to that notion is, how do we grow the most medicine in the most efficient way?
Right, but it's also the most medicinal way.
Exactly.
And so, for instance, like Sepp Holter, he's like his own brand of permaculture, and he's like this guy in the Alps that's growing citrus in the middle of winter and 6,000 feet. It's wild, right? But he's figured out that if you want medicinal plants to be truly medicinal, they need to be kind of not nurtured, and they need to be in more of their natural landscape. So he does this thing where it's like, okay, let's take essential oils from this garden bed where you plant, like, I don't know, like oregano. And then you go and plant the oregano or something else, like holy basil or something. And then you plant it where it's stony or rocky. And he was saying that this particular herb in the Alps, it wants to be on the stony, rocky area because it's where it naturally occurs. And then he said, yeah, you get like a fraction of the yield, but examine the essential oils that you get off of it.
Ah.
And it's like the quality was ridiculous. And then he did the same thing with citrus and other fruits. And so he would get these incredible fruits. Like, they would only use his fruits for like schnapps or something like that, because the flavors could be concentrated at such a high level that they would still hold true because they were so fantastic, you know. And so there's all these like interesting traits and perfections and geometric, all like basically all the sacred math that we talk about and that we, that people who are first getting into with like permaculture and try to design into their garden, that never really matters when you do that in the garden in a macro way. It's all happening on a micro, like
molecular,
like a microscopic level, level, and then molecular level. So the inside of the plant is harmonious, and so when you eat that plant, you're building
you
your body with building blocks that are harmonious.
Yes.
And then you're actually keying into your local air, water, and climate, and calibrating your body and your immune system to those things, and so you're aligning yourself to the cycles of your local area, and that in itself taps you into the things that will protect you. So suddenly, like, pollen, instead of being a negative thing, is the thing that reinforces you. And that's what people eat, bee pollen, because they're like, oh, wait, I need to be inoculated with this. But if you're just, like, eating stuff in your garden, there's bee pollen everywhere, you know? You're eating nasturtium flowers. It's like, yeah, there's probably pollen in there. You know what I mean? So when we live a certain way, all these things start happening in harmony, but we don't readily see that until we actually have working examples. And that's why we're so lucky to have people like Jeff Lawton, and that was my teacher, and that's why I do what I do. I mean, I was homesteading, and basically I hit a wall with organic food, because I was like, all right, well, how do you prove this guy's got good tomatoes and this guy doesn't? And then I was like, okay, well, how do you know what I mean? And all these soil tests we have, they don't test any life, and they don't test organic matter. And so those are the key, like, components and indicators of fertility and water holding capacity. So it just, so, like, basically, like, the whole organic path was still locked into the conventional way of thinking, like, NPK fertilizer and all this garbage way of, like, you know, Elaine Ingham, the doctor, the soil scientist, Dr. Elaine Ingham, she's now, like, at this point where she doesn't even, like, want to, like, compost, like, put down compost. She only wants to compost tea. She's, she's no-till. She's, I mean, she doesn't even worry about pH because she's like, if the soil life is there, the plant will talk to the soil life and they'll change the pH right there around the root. And I'll be able to prove it. Take the dirt out around the root and do it, your little pH test, and then I'll do it over here and you'll see they're different 3 months later.
There is
and the plant's thriving.
There is an intelligence happening. Okay, in you're speaking my language here. And I want to relate what you're saying to something I always share with my audience is
totally
all day, every day, your cells are literally renewing themselves. Every 28 days, you have a new immune system. Every 7 years, every cell is completely new. So if you think about it, like you are a renewing machine and nature is producing for you the most perfect things if you allow it to renew you. So it, like you said, it's like it reveals truth to you, and that's the truth. And just as nature wants to evolve, your being, your body wants to evolve, and it's best to do it in a system that's like made with love and good intention.
Right. Right. And I feel like that is abundance. That's what abundance is. And when you have an abundance, you can't help but have good intention because it liberates you from having waste, actually. Like, so let's say I have too many apples. Well, I give them around town, and I feel so good. This is just going to rot. And then suddenly it's like, oh, I got all this time. I got these skills. You know, I'm going to go help people. And it's seeing the world in a completely different way, and we can get to that kind of economy, an abundant economy.
Yeah.
And we actually really have to because our economy is designed to liquidate nature.
Mm-hmm.
That it's designed to turn it into dollars. And
it's allopathic medicine. It's allopathic medicine.
It's poisonous. It's the opposite. It's deductive. And so it's like we're creating these cancers in our cities, and all these different things that we have problems in are simply poorly designed, and our social systems are poorly designed. And I totally think it starts with the garden, and it starts with having someone eat it too. I teach cooking in my online the permaculture student online, because when someone tastes it, especially a child, when they taste it, they know it's different, and it's like a truth that's revealed to them, and it's our birthright to like have good food.
Yes, it is, and you know what's so beautiful about the notion of creating an abundance, and this is my ultimate dream in the world. Is essentially right now in this paradigm, in this allopathic model, we trade our life for dollars, and we trade those dollars for sustenance. I'm not calling it food, I'm calling it sustenance, because that's what we buy. And we're missing out on the thing that nourishes us, you know, not only including food, but our essence. What do we want to do? You know, what's in our heart? What's in our mission? You know, as a individual, like within this unit. And I feel like if there is an abundance of food, people can reclaim those life hours, those dollars, because they don't have to trade the life to eat food. And they're made of something so much better on a cellular level. And then their optimal them is creating that which is intended. And that
totally.
is the birthright of mankind, is what is in you. Like, my good friend Leslie has been trying to join our call. Are you there, Leslie?
Yeah, I'm here right now.
And Matt Powers, Leslie Goldman, is one of my teachers. And he's very inspiring to me because his message to people is that they are rare seeds. And all of them are special, and they need to be nourished. And see how all of our ideas intertwine, just like the cycles of nature. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
So if you have any questions for Matt, Leslie, I would love for you to take an opportunity to ask or share with us some words.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me listen a little bit more and then I'll chime in.
Sounds good. So do you see that notion in the people that you teach now, you know, now that they're not inhibited by government force of following a model of education? Like, how does this transpire in this world that you're creating? Like,
well, you mean like what people am I educating and what?
Yeah.
Are their, like,
well, you said like it brings truth to them, and like what do people express? Like what do you see? Literally, what happens? Like,
well, what I see is that people get really excited because they suddenly see how it applies to like everything around them. So, like from what you were just saying about you know rare people are rare seeds. I mean, I just did a talk at the Heirloom Expo in Santa Rosa about how children are the seed. And I also talk about how, you know, each of us has a message, I believe, and that each of us has to, you know, figure out what that message is and learn to share it with everyone that we meet.
Yes.
And I believe that everyone's message is positive, you know, even if it's like a warning.
There's some truth to that, and you know, life is school, and the moment's the lesson. And the more moments I have, the more I realize that, and that's something I've really been taking into practice in my life. Just because, like you said, situations aren't always positive in our experience, but how can you let it make you better? You know, your cells are trying to get better every moment. Allow them to do that. You know, experience something, and then let it change you how it can in a good way, and then let it go. You know, plants go through that cycle. You know,
right. Well, the problem is the solution, right?
Tell me about it.
Right. Okay. So that's the permaculture principle. So, like, the problem is the solution. So, let's say that you have too much waste. Well, you just turn that waste. You have to cycle it into some fertility, because all waste in nature turns into some fertility. So if you have, like, all those, all these, like, cow farmers, you just keep the cows locked in, and that all that manure is turning, like, anaerobic, and it's stinking, and it's causing all these diseases and all these problems. That is supposed to actually nourish the soil and return to the soil in the proper balance.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be this awesome asset. It could be the great compost. It could be the salt. There's so many different options, right?
Mm-hmm.
But instead, it's become this problem. For instance, there's this classic story that people tell in permaculture about the guy with too many grasshoppers. He can't grow anything. The grasshoppers eat it down. He doesn't know what to do. He's been trying to farm. His neighbor goes, well, it seems like you just have a turkey deficit. And the guy looks at him and goes, oh. He goes and gets turkeys and then raises turkeys on nothing but the grasshoppers in his backyard, turns it into a huge profit for several years, but then the grasshoppers die down, and he laments later on the grasshoppers, the plague of grasshoppers, you know, that was this problem, how wonderful a solution it became. So we have to just realize that there is a cycle happening, and if we are observant, and if we understand what nature's trying to do, we can assist in that in a way that's beneficial to us and the planet.
That's such a good point. And it reminds me of something I just recently read in a book called The Conscious Resistance. There's a part in there where it talks about the Navajo's perspective of the cycles that people experience via their experience. And they say that there's like four worlds or four different types of perception. And it goes from being like on one scale of the model, we'll call it allopathic, to holistic. And people go through the stages where they're observing things as separate, all the way to being the dew on a plant or the nectar that's being extracted from a flower, you know, and it just, we have that ability as humans, I believe. You know, this comes from tribes who were so connected to the earth and they developed this concept, and it's true. And I really believe that as humans, we move through these levels of connectivity with our earth. And depending on where we are, it affects the way we do everything, the way we talk to other people, the way we misunderstand each other, the way we assimilate sustenance, you know, the foods that we crave. I'm sure you're aware of the importance of gut flora. That's something we talk about a lot on this program. And
we do water keepers.
There you go. So you understand. And like, how does that relate to permaculture? Like, what happens to your gut when you eat this type of food?
Well, I mean, if you're going to eat something fresh out of your garden, you're going to have living enzymes on it.
Ooh, enzymes. You know what I mean? Why are those important?
Well, I mean, you need to have living enzymes, like, to repopulate your gut. And you need enzymes to digest things properly. So people have this simplified biome in their gut, and they can't digest all these things. And it's like, no wonder, right? They can't digest it because they don't have those elements any longer. I have to take digestive, enzymes. Aid digestion from myself. I understand these things.
I have a theory, and it's just, I think that the people our age are suffering all of these quote unquote diseases or conditions. It's because we are like third generation of disconnection from the earth, you know. And a lot of people say it comes from one thing or another, but the point is that it happened. And I think that if we replenish the earth in the way that it wants, like you say, we too will be replenished, because it'll be in balance. The plants will have all of the things that they could. They'll be optimal, right? It's so exciting to think about.
Well,
that.
Vandana Shiva says this: if we're eating conventional food, we are eating oil. And if we eat naturally made food, we're eating soil.
Ah.
So that is the choice we have. Is eat soil and be healthy and build our bodies and build our immune systems and build the generation, or we can eat oil and poison the generation, because that is what the herbicides, pesticides, fungicides, and fertilizers are all made out of.
So beautifully put. It's true.
Matt, I've got a question. So you were teaching at the National Heirloom Expo?
I was a speaker in the craft hall, I believe. Not the one where Vandana Shiva spoke, but the secondary one. It was my first year there.
Uh-huh.
And it was awesome. It was a huge room, though, but it wasn't a huge one where Vandana Shiva. It was the secondary.
Yeah. What was the experience like for you?
It was awesome. I wanted to share it with everyone, but my charger had been left at home. So I couldn't film it. So that was my bittersweet thing. But other than that, it was really incredible. I got off stage. I met some incredible people that, embraced me. And they're now, part of the course, part of the family. You know, and I made connections with people during that entire expo that are totally going to change my life.
You almost
changed
need
the
more
course
days.
Of my life.
I felt like there was so much to see and so many amazing people that you could spend days talking to just one person or entertaining one booth. It's just, can
the
we have...
The energy was there.
Right? Can we have like a month? Can we just do it every day? Like, I sat back at the expo and I'm like, this should be normal life. People should be doing this every day, is like sharing their ideas and their goods with each other.
Yeah, it should be a traveling expo. You should do one in New York with Hudson Valley. I've talked to Jared Gettle about this.
No, I'm just saying.
He's one of the people that I really connect with.
I'm glad to hear that. That's awesome. But just imagine, the result of our efforts now, that will be life, as people will have to have those types of markets and skill shares and idea shares and sea trades, all the time to sustain what is to come. Like, I sat back in awe several times with that notion, like, this could be life, you know, like, oh.
Yeah, no, I mean, it kind of is my life. I have hundreds of varieties outside the window growing.
There you go.
I've got a food forest that's young but growing. I've got dozens of trees in. And family land, and I'm living on family land, but I'm going to buy land eventually and move there and then transform that. And I do consults where I help people and teach people how to transform their land.
That's amazing. What kind do you use any outside products? Like, or is there anything that you work with specifically that you recommend to people who want to get started? Or how can
my books. You can go to thepermaculturestudent.com, and I have ebooks, versions of the Permaculture Student 1 and the workbook, which is like a guide with like recipes, and it's got worksheets and formulas.
Yeah.
You know, because the thing is, it's like, you know, calculating sun angle is easy if you do it by eye, but if you actually want a number because you're building a front porch, you know what I mean? Like, then you have to use like a tan function, and you're like, oh wait, but how does that work? And you just look it up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I've got the digital forms with their index, so it's really quick if you have that. Those of you who choose to take my course will get the ebooks free as part of the course. So it's been really exciting. I basically launched the book, and I wrote last winter the book during the school when all the crazy stuff was happening.
Yeah, I want to get back into that in a second.
And then it like blew up. And I just took me out of school, and it was like, wow, you don't need to take money from the state anymore. You can just make your own.
That's agorism. Have you heard the term agorism? Or agorism? Agorism or agorism? Some people say it differently. It's basically evolved anarchy. We want to remove ourselves from that negative word. Agorism is basically permaculture and ideals within all aspects of society. Simply put.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah,
I've never heard of that before. I mean, everyone's just kind of trying to rebrand the word anarchy.
Exactly.
And I think they've actually done a pretty good job of rebranding it.
I think so. And I want to talk about something that's really important, and I think it relates to our entire conversation this evening, which I'm very grateful for. And this is Senate Bill 277. Are you aware of this bill?
Is this the one is it the vaccines or the mosquito?
Ding, ding, yeah. Freaking mandatory vaccines, like, oh, as a parent, it's just such an infringement upon rights. And I want to stress to people that tomorrow is the last day that you can sign the referendum that allows the, if there's enough signatures, on the ballot in November, there will be a vote so that parents can choose to have an exemption if they want. That means that their students starting in 2016 will not have forced vaccines. And right now, the only way to get around that is if you have special conditions and can actually convince a doctor to sign a release for you, which is really difficult. And I'm sure they don't want that on them. A lot of doctors actually like deny you care if you don't vaccinate your children. And just regardless of your beliefs and whether it's necessary or not, the government should not be able to mandate administration of anything into anybody's body. I don't give a care. Point.
Right, but a business should not be able to change what a government mandate is independent of a government having control over that through the people. So in other words, they can add as many vaccines as they want the minute that's fully legalized. Like, oh, it was 150, and I know it was 8 when you were a boy, which is what it was when I was, right? So it was 8 vaccines my entire life, right?
That's crazy.
And versus like over 100 now.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And so they have like 200, 300 more that they're trying to patent right now. So it's like, okay, so they're just going to jack everyone up so that they could do government sales. Because if you're selling through government, there's no, and it's mandated, there's a guaranteed projected sale so everyone can cash in on Wall Street.
Exactly. It's
okay. Like a total systematized way of doing business that people have to realize and just say no to.
And it's terrible. And these types of things happen, and it's sad to see that we're the subject of such like blatant corruption and greed. And people...
My mom was a politician.
Oh?
And you know what? My mom was a politician, and she totally was in a group of women who was educated in the 70s who came into politics and disrupted all the boys' clubs. And they totally were the huge disruption. She was a moderate Republican, so she was all for environmental education, pro-choice. And then she made all these compromises with the Democrats in the House of Representatives in Connecticut, and it caused all these problems. And in fact, they tried to bully her by, like, doing intimidating phone calls to vote for the NRA's, some of the assault rifles. And then they tried to force her to do something with racial profiling. And she just wouldn't, like, toe the line. She was like, this doesn't make any logical sense. I will not sign a law, and I will not say I agree to a law that makes absolutely no sense. This creates racial profiling. It doesn't take it away.
Well, and she so actually read things? Wow.
Well, this is the thing. My mom wrote the special ed curriculum for the state of New York City for middle school.
Enough said.
In the 70s when there wasn't one. And then she went to Columbia University and they tried to teach it to her. So she's like in a totally separate category that I'm just lucky to, you know. She's not perfect. We're none of us are perfect, right? But she's amazing.
That's awesome. Go mom's genes.
I know. My mom's amazing. But yeah, she really gave me this window and humanized politics in a way that you don't ever see, because it was a small, she just was a small town, you know, small town representative that went and like basically started fights by just doing what she thought was right. And she just stood up for it and was strong. And, you know, I just feel like we all need to do that. You know, we all just need to stand up and be strong and be like, no, that's not right. And we're not going to stand for it. No one's going to participate in it here. So you can just move on, you know? And if our towns, our cities, if we just said no to like IMF banking, let's say perhaps, or McDonald's, or, you know, if we just said, no, well, our town just doesn't do that, and no one just bought from them, they would just shut down and go away.
No, that's happening. No, they've lost a lot of money. You can, on the antimedia.org, we've been reporting on it a lot. McDonald's is suffering, and other corporations as well. And, you know, dollars aren't just exchange hours of your life. They're your vote, too. You spend your money where it matters. You invest in your education towards whatever it is that you thrive on, and you support local farmers and things that are going to make you healthy.
I think most people are just getting up and walking away from TV, and they're just walking away from the news, and they're like, I don't believe you any longer.
That's why, you know, the anti-media is listened to all over the world.
Yeah.
It was seriously like, thank you, everybody who listens to us, because it matters, and it makes it. China could be listening to us right now, and they're going to talk about this with their friends. You know, or just who knows what can happen.
We're giving truth, right? I mean, that's the whole point, is we're truth seekers.
I think
so. We're truth spreaders.
I think so.
And so, like, we're trying to spread like good, beneficial, ethical ways of being that allow people to be more free and self-reliant and beneficial. And that's the thing, is it's like the story that's told in school is you have to compete with each other to win. And there's a limited amount of resources, so you can't all get A's. And it's like this crazy, like, factory farm or, like, controlled operating scheme, you know, operation. And we're just shoving kids through And it just drove me nuts. And that's why I needed to teach life skills so kids could actually, like, create a business locally that would provide for family. And I want, the thing is, it's like, our generation needs to be able to own land.
Yeah, real talk.
Not through a bank. Own it. Like, no mortgage. We need to own it.
Yeah.
And if that's possible, that means that we have what our heritage should be. We should all be able to own land. We should be able to, but what we have is what happened at the end of, like, European dominance of things before America, you know, declared independence, with landlords controlling everything. Banks are the landlord.
Mm-hmm.
If you miss the two payments, doesn't matter if you've been planting for 20 years, all that equity is gone. They just take the land and the house. It doesn't make any sense. That means that they actually own it.
It's madness.
And we're just leasing it from that. It's total madness.
No, the system is madness. Just the notion that I have to keep buying food is crazy to me, because within one melon is an infinite supply of melon. Right?
It is.
Like,
but, you know, one corn ear is not an infinite supply of that corn because of inbreeding. You need 100 to 150 or 100 to 200, depending on the variety, of said corn. Otherwise, they'll start having these inbreeding things that go down.
Ew,
so
that's
it works that way with certain things, like, I think, peas, because they are very comfortable inbreeding.
But the idea is that it's perpetual, and I want to share that with
you. Oh, yeah. The whole idea is sustainable.
Exactly.
The whole idea of sustainable is even, like, not quite where we want to be. We want to be, like, regenerative, where it's, like, every turn of that cycle's wheel, we're, like, spreading, like, sparks of, like, creation and, like, shedding, like, new, like, layers of, like, unexperienced fertility and nutrition and abundance. And like Jeff Lawrence talked with me about this on Permaculture Tonight. He said that we don't have the capacity to understand what is possible on the planet, because we are so far away from what's actually natural.
Mm.
I was telling one of my students that what we look at when we look at the woods outside Yosemite and the National Forest, all these areas all over California, almost all of it is regrowth, meaning it was planted by us, or it was cut back and regrown, and like something uh-huh. else grew there because we planted it. So that's why Douglas fir pines are everywhere.
Yeah.
That's why we have a monoculture. That's why the beetles attacking the monoculture. And so we spaced things a certain way so it was easy to count. We did all these things so that we could keep accounting of our national forests, because we considered them an agricultural product because it's firewood to them. So we did all these things. We set it up in such a way that we created these issues decades ago. And so, and not only that, the way we handle like fire suppression is we gather up all the weeds that supposed to go back into the soil and we burn them and send them into the sky. Totally insane. But so we've like broken all these cycles. And I'm like, look around you. Nothing you see is natural.
Oh my
nature God. Literally is like running around screaming her head off. Like, that's what that is.
Can I tell you about the most beautiful thing that happened to me at the expo? That
Sure.
Okay, I had this experience where I didn't have any technology for days just because of circumstances. And like you, I didn't plan charging abilities in the best manner. But it was so liberating. And I had a walk in the early hours, and I felt my whole trip to the expo, I felt so connected to acorn trees. And I had all these beautiful moments with acorn trees. I spent an afternoon like sitting in one in its shade. And then on the fairgrounds, I literally passed an acorn tree and felt so inclined to like sit with it, because I realized like this is a sacred old being of energy, you know what I mean? Like, I was experiencing life and like in such a connected realm, you know. I just being in that realm of food, I felt so different. It, you know, it was It was amazing. It was like a fairyland of food. I don't know how to explain it. So I'm there with this tree, and I bow to the tree, you know. I'm like, I honor you, tree. And I felt it. I swear to you, I felt the power of that tree flash through my body, and it was like being embraced by the cosmos. Like imagine being your mom's womb and like getting hugged. That tree hugged me, and I've been a different woman since then. And like, you can, the Enchanted Gardener Leslie Goldman taught me that you can talk to plants, and I had a sacred moment with that tree. And what if everybody treated plants that way? You know, like it's healing medicine just everywhere without us trying. Imagine if we did try.
Incredible.
I mean, you understand what I'm talking about, right? Like when you're being with nature and you're honoring its intention, you feel it. You feel it.
And nature responds. I mean, like, I go into my garden and there's so many living things per square inch. And I'm not talking about like just beneath the soil. I mean, I've got like a forest, and I'm chopping parts of it down right now to get ready for the fall planting. But I've got stuff that's it's 12 to 16 feet high in most areas on the berms, and you go into it, and the berms, you know, the slope is down, so you're like, it's this huge like thing above you, and so there's birds all throughout it. And I planted like millet and amaranth and quinoa and buckwheat. And all these, I planted such a variety of things that, and there's such an abundance of everything that I can't actually get to everything. Every time I go out, I'm like, oh, there's beans. Oh, wow, there's lots of beans. And then I'm like collecting them, and it's like, it's dark. I need to go in and make food now. And it's like, I can't finish the beans in this row. Okay, I can't finish the beans in this row. This is good. You know, and it's like, it's this wonderful, like, change because you realize that, like, just like the energy in our house can come from a solar panel, or you can design your house so it traps light in such a way that you just live by the light of the day.
Oh, yes,
Yeah, I mean,
please.
they design homes in Asia with light in mind, like, they do not, in Praise of Shadow is a great book about this. And so, we can design things passively with nature so we don't use any fossil fuels, any like uranium or plutonium or anything beyond. Like, we can just use the sun and the energies around us, like the wind, water, and we don't need anything else.
What an idea. Oh my gosh, Matt,
I
that's
only use hand tools. You know, I just use hand tools. I don't do any like machines. I do like something from a compost tea, but I could
well,
probably make something happen
we,
out of it.
can you believe it? We're at the end of our time. We're gonna check back with
Okay.
you. Thank you so much. Everybody, go find his culture, his permaculture course, and check us out on Monday. Thank you, Matt.
Right, thank you.
Bye, buddy.
I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.